Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Beitza is Daf Chaf Dalet. We should be beginning the third parak of the Masechta today. We're behind. We're in the last Mishnah of the second parak. So we're going to be starting today on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf will be one of the Zech Nishmas, Los Lupin Zoltzman. The Mishnah continues, Shlosha Dvarim. Okay, we discussed in the last Mishnayos of the second parak where they practiced Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel took on some Chumras, took on some Kulas. Chumras from the camp of Beis Shammai, and Kulas, I don't know where the Kulas came from, but Kulas as well. The Chumras were controversial, the Kulas were controversial. We've been discussing now, the past couple of days, both those stringencies and leniencies that he helped himself towards. Now the Mishnah, we're on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, now the Mishnah, Shlosha Dvarim Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah Matya. So now we move on to Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah historically lived at the end of the Second Temple period. In fact, lived very little during the actual Second Temple. Lived primarily after the period of the Bais Sheni. So his life was more in the aftermath of the destruction of the Second Temple. I mention that because, as you'll see, that point will be relevant in just a moment. And just in general, it's important to know these things. But Shlosha Dvarim Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah Matir. So there were three things that Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah allowed himself to be lenient with. V'chachamim osrim. And the Chachamim were Oser. Number one, Parasa Yosef Berutzua Shebein Karneham. So its animal, his animal, would go out on Shabbos with some sort of Ritzua, some sort of ribbon. Okay, Rashi says it was decorative. If you take a look at Rashi, Berutzua Shebein Karneham, Rashi says Lenoi. It was used for the purpose of decoration. And the Chachamim said that's not considered clothing. Okay, we know that your animals have to rest on Shabbos like you do. Not exactly like you do. But in other words, there's certain things that the animal is entitled to do that you can't do on Shabbos. Right? Tosus gives an example. He quotes Mechilta. Tosus back in Shabbos. And, you know, your animals are allowed to eat on Shabbos, meaning pluck the grass off the ground in order to eat. Meaning that, to that degree, your animal can enjoy Shabbos. Your animal doesn't have to abide by the malachas of Kotzer in that regard. Obviously, you and I can't. You and I can't pluck fruit off a tree on Shabbos. Okay, but in other words, but generally speaking, though, your animal has to be Shomer Shabbos. So that means that your animal can't carry on Shabbos. So anything which is not clothing or functionality for the animal, so that's considered a musr, that's considered a burden, and the animal cannot go out with it on Shabbos. And you have to make sure, you have to ensure that your animals are going now burden-free on Shabbos. So the ribbon that was worn by the cow of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, so he felt, I don't know what he felt. He felt it was nice, it was ornamental, or whatever. He felt there's some sort of functionality. And the Chachamim said, no, there is no functionality to it, and therefore they disagreed. So that's issue number one. Number two, back to the Mishnah. Umekardin es abehema biyamtov. Basically combing the animal on yamtov. We're going to talk about different types of combs used. For those of you who are involved in animal care, over Cholamod, over yamtov, we had somebody who was here who knew about these things. From Denver. Anyway, so but combing the animal on yamtov. So he said that's okay. And we're going to see in the Gemara that, no, that's not okay. We're going to discuss why that's not okay in the Gemara. And he would grind peppers using different types of grinders. And Rashi says, much like the ones we have nowadays. And Rabbi Huda Omer, Ein Mekardin and Sebehema Biyamtov, Mimnesha Ose Chabura. So Rabbi Huda says, no, you can't comb the animal because by combing the animal with these very fine combs, ultimately what's going to happen, inevitably what's going to happen, is that you're going to create a chabur, you're going to create a wound in the animal. Creating a wound in the animal is one of the malachas on Shabbos, so that you're not allowed to do. Ava mekarzefin, but you're allowed to do mekarzefin. Mekarzefin is another type of combing, but using not a fine-tooth comb, but using a much coarser comb. Right, it's apparently it's made out of wood. Right, that's how Rashi describes it. Megrer shel eitz sheshineh gasos. The teeth of this comb is a much wider comb, and therefore it's not going to create a chabura. V'chachamim omrim ein mekardim ve'af lo mekartzafin. And the chachamim said, no, on yantav you can't do either. Neither the fine tooth comb nor not even the wider toothed comb. You can't comb the animal. Okay, we'll come back to that. We'll discuss that in just a moment. We start with the Gemara. L'meimah de Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah chad aparah havilei. So first of all, the Gemara just makes the following observation from the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes the cow of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So that's a funny way to describe Rav Elazar ben Azariah as having only but one cow. V'amirav, v'amirla, amirav, yehuna, amirav, t'leisa, alfe, igle, have, maisa, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, me'edre, kol shasa, v'shasa. The Gemara only talks about how much he gives as maisa behema. How much does he give us off as maisa behema? So 13,000. 13,000 animals are given off as maisa behema. So now let's work in reverse. So if he's giving 13,000 as maisa behema, so that means that he had 130,000 cows every year. If he's giving a tenth, not giving it away as maisa behema, you don't give maisa behema away. But in other words, you dedicate maisa behema, it's now a carbon, you bring it to Yerushalayim, you bring it as a carbon. So if 13,000 is how much he's giving as maisa behema, so that means that he had 130,000 annually. In other words, he had a lot of cows. So we'll come back to that in just a moment. So the Gemara says, Tana lo shalo haisa. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa clarifies the issue. It wasn't his cow. The paraso shel Rav Elazar ben Azariah was not his cow. Ela shel shechinaso haisa, but rather it belonged to a neighbor. Umitoch shelo micha ba nikreis al shmo. And he didn't reprimand, he didn't give tochacha, meaning he had a neighbor, and the neighbor was doing something which was not Shabbos, and not Shabbos appropriate. So, and he didn't give tochacha, he didn't give reprimand. So therefore, he got full credit. In this case, when I say credit, I don't mean credit. I mean he got the blame. He was given the front headlines of the Mishnah. It was his cow. His cow in the sense that it was his neighbor. And he didn't give tochacha, and Kol Yisrael Raven Zebazer were guarantors for one another. And we have to make sure that we have to take care of each other, both in the positive and also making sure that we don't do anything that's wrong. Okay, so that's the Gemara says, that's the story behind the Mishnah of it was just but one cow. You take a look at Tosus over here. Tosus is really bothered by the fact that the description of Rav Elazar ben Azariah is he was giving Maiser Behema. So Tosus says, Rav Elazar ben Azariah was giving Maiser Behema. What are we talking about? Yeah, well, right. When did he live? So take a look at Tosos. Tosos over here is Bada Vitema. Vahab Rav Elazar ben Azariah, the second Tosos on the Amud. Vitema, Vahab Rav Elazar ben Azariah, he achar churban habayis tuva. So first of all, Tosos does the math. Rav Elazar ben Azariah lived after the Beis HaMikdash. Taharan gam lahaya nasi kodem Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So we know, basically, what was the sequence, who was the order of Nasi, in terms of who the head of the Jewish people was. So first, Rav Gamliel comes before Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Gamliel haya l'achar churban habayis. And we know that Rav Gamliel came after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Ha Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai haya oset takanos miyad l'achar churban habayis. Mishum Rav Gamliel lo higia yamav lios Nasi. In other words, Rashi says, let's plot the graph, the timeline. We know Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai created takanos after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, right? We've seen a number of them, since we learned Masech the Sukkah, we've seen a number of institutions that were made that was made by Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, followed then by Rav Gamliel. Right? Remember Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai when he was secretly taken out of the out of the sieged Jerusalem. The Gemara in Gittin tells us the story that he was taken out of the sieged Jerusalem. So he meets in front of the Caesar and he says to the Caesar, right, three requests, and one of the requests was, I want Rabbi Gamliel Ubeis Dino. I need Rabbi Gamliel. So in other words, so it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who lived after the destruction, followed then by Rabbi Gamliel, followed only afterwards by Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And so Tosus is bothered. So Kedama Mishachar Beis Hamikdash Shikim Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai V'achar Kach Rabbi Gamliel V'achar Kach Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So we are now putting Rav Elazar ben Azariah three Nasis after the Churban. Rabbi Gamliel was, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was immediately after the destruction, followed then by Rabbi Gamliel, followed then by Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So Rav Elazar lo haya ki im ben shmona esrei shana kishaya nasi. Now this we all know, right? Only a week ago we were sitting down at the Seder, right? And we said this Mishnah over in Brachos, and we all know. He was 18 years of age when he assumed the position of Nasi. So now Tosfos is saying, now I'm really lost, because he assumed the position of Nasius at his 18th birthday, and he was not one but two Nasis after the Churban, right? Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, then Rabbi Gamliel, then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So now Tosfos says, I'm totally lost. How could he be giving Maaser Behema? Maaser Behema, after the Churban, after the destruction of the Second Temple, Maaser Behema was stopped for a very simple reason. Because there was no Beis HaMikdash, and you can't offer the animal as a carbon. Okay, so Tosfos is really bothered. All this historically doesn't work out. And V'yesh lama d'lon is bata la'altar, kiyum la'achar zman. So one possibility, says Tosfos, is that even though the Gemara in Bechora says that they stopped Maaser Behema after the destruction, maybe it wasn't year one after the destruction, maybe it was sometime shortly after the destruction. Possibility. Difficult to understand, but that's a possibility. Another possibility, says Tosfos, is that, well, maybe it wasn't Rav Elazar ben Azariah who was giving off Maaser Behema, but it was his, in other words, he inherited a fortune. And it could be that we're talking about while he was a child, while he was still extremely young, and we're talking about his custodian, whoever was the trustee of his estate. Or maybe you don't have to take our Gemara so literally. Our Gemara says Maaser Behema. Maaser Behema could just simply mean some sort of taxation. Meaning that, you know, it wasn't Maaser Behema in the traditional, in the Torah sense of every tenth animal goes to the Beis HaMikdash, offered on the Mizbech, but just simply means 10% tax that he gave. Another possibility. Okay, anyway, interesting. Oh, it does give us the opportunity to just make sure that we know exactly who lives where, and give us a timeline of the Nasis after the Churban Bayis Sheni. Anyway, back to the Gemara. Okay, so the point number one of our Mishnah, again, three things Rav Elazar ben Azariah allowed himself to do. So number one, he let his cow roam around on Shabbos while wearing the ribbon. And again, we now know it's not his cow, it's his neighbor's cow. He didn't reprimand, but still, that was a heter. Two, Kadrinus Behema B'yamtav, you're allowed to comb the animal on Yantav. By the way, everyone notice, the first issue of the Mishnah was a Shabbos issue. It was not a Yantav issue. In fact, on Yantav, one can make the very simple argument that that's okay, because we're allowed to carry Yantav. And if we're allowed to carry Yantav, our animals are allowed to carry Yantav as well. So the first issue in the Mishnah is a Shabbos issue. Now the Mishnahs go back to Yantav. On Yantav, you're allowed to, according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, you're allowed to comb your animals with this very fine tooth comb, which creates punctures and wounds in the animal. Tanu Rabbanan Ezu Karud VeEzu Kartzuf. The first Abraisa over here gives us definitions. What's what? Karud Ketanim VeOseh Chabura Kartzuf Gedolim VeEnosim Chabura. So the Karud, very fine, creates wounds in the animal. And kartsuf, wider teeth, and don't create wounds in the animal. And the Gemara says, if you want to summarize the issue, there are three opinions on this matter. Number one, Rabbi Yehuda said, "Davar shenu miskaven aser." Rabbi Yehuda, as we all know, and we see many times throughout Shas, by "Davar shenu miskaven," even though I don't intend to do the malacha, but a "Davar shenu miskaven" is prohibited. So miyo karud ketanim vaosim chabura kartsuf gedolim veinosim chabura v'lo gazrin and kartsuf hatu karud. Okay, so you can't comb the animal with a fine tooth comb because that's going to create a chabura. That's not my intent. It doesn't matter. A davish enu miskaven is also according to Rav Yehuda. The wider one, the kartsuf, so that's not going to create a chabura, and therefore you could use it. And Rav Yehuda doesn't make a gzera, meaning the kartsuf is okay, the karud is not okay, and there's no gzera kartsuf atu karud. Now, v'rabbanan savrei nami k'Rav Yehuda, davar shenu miskaven is aser. Interestingly enough, opinion number two are the chachamim. They agree principally with Rav Yehuda, and then furthermore, gazrin kartsuf atu karud. And then the chachamim of our Mishnah say, not only do we agree principally with Rav Yehuda, but we also lay a gzera on top of that. So that is now a gzera that you can't use a kartsuf because that'll come to be used a karud, and we hold that a davar shenu miskaven is aser. And then Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, like Rabbi Shimon. And then in the Mishnah, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, who was Mekel, is going like Rabbi Shimon. Damar Davar Shenu Miskaven is Mutter. Ubein Karud, Ubein Kartsuf, Shari. And therefore you're allowed to use both, the Karud and the Kartsuf. Okay. Now, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Amar Rav Nachman, L'chudei Alach, Rabbi Shimon. Sharei Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Mo'odolo. So the Gemara says, okay, now on this issue, time and again, I mean, the Gemara says this already a number of times, but here the Gemara says it again. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon, And Rav Elazar ben Azariah holds like Rabbi Shimon. So Amalei Rav Elazar Rav Nachman v'lei mamar halachik Rabbi Yehuda sharei chachamim modim lo. So the Gemara says, well, that argument in of itself is not super compelling, because in our Mishnah, in our very own Mishnah, meaning you don't have to go anywhere else in Shas, just stay in our Mishnah, I have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah agreeing with Rabbi Shimon, I also have the chachamim of our Mishnah agreeing to Rabbi Yehuda. So if you just want to line it up, we have a, it seems to be a majority position, found like Rav Yehuda, so how is that a strong argument? So, Amalei, Anak, Rabbi Shimon Sfirli, V'ocharei Rav Elazar ben Azariah Modelam. So the response is, and I'm not really sure how this is a response, but the response is, look, I hold like Rabbi Shimon, and Rav Elazar ben Azariah agrees to it? Okay. Meaning, all right, good. Your point taken. In our mission, the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Yehuda, but we have a tradition that the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. Okay, Adkan. We are now on Chav Gimel Amud Beis. We're at the top of the Amud. Next point in the Mishnah, Rechayim. The Gemara didn't discuss it. Right, great point. All right, the Gemara spent a little bit of time with the cow, a lot of time with the combing, and grinding peppercorns. Okay, I don't know. Good. Good point. Harichaim shel pilpulim tamei mishum shosha kelim. Okay, now the Mishnah over here is going to depart and leave the world of Yanta for just a moment. We enter into the world of Tumah Tahara. Okay, so we just have to know a couple of rules of Tumah Tahara in order to understand the short Mishnah and the ensuing discussion in the Gemara. It's whatever. It's just a little bit of Tumah Tahara. So the pepper mill. So they had a pepper mill, and it's subject to Tumah. All three parts of it. Okay. Now, it'd be the best thing, of course, if I had a pepper mill that the Mishnah was describing over here, and we were all looking at it, so I wouldn't have to be just simply trying to describe it. That'd be the best. Understood. Okay, get ready for second best, which is me just trying to describe it. Okay, pepper mill is made up of basically three components, right? From the top to the bottom, we'll go one, two, three. I'll go from the bottom up, actually. Okay, so the base, we'll call number three. The base of the pepper mill is just basically a receptacle. In other words, it's a wooden receptacle where when you're after the pepper mills are ground, so all the ground pepper now falls into the base. Okay, it's basically a wooden receptacle. Good. That's Mekabel Tumah. And we'll explain why for each one of them in just a moment. And just right now, I'm just describing what the mill actually looks like. Okay, then there's the middle section. The middle section is very simple. It's just a sieve. It's a sift. So that when you're grinding the peppers, so what's going to happen now is that all the ground pepper is going to go through. That which is not ground stays on the sift. And then you'll go back and you'll put it right back on the top again, and you'll grind it again. And the top part, obviously, is the grinder. That's the part that's actually grinding the pepper. So it's grinder on the top, sift on the middle, and then a receptacle on the bottom. 2 and 3 are made out of wood. 1 is made out of metal. And that's important, as we'll see in just a moment. Harichaim shel pilpulim tamei. So the Mishnah says that this mill is tamei. Meaning, when right, you learn your Mishnahs in Taharos, Tamei over here means susceptible to Tumah. Meaning it has the status of a Kli, each one of them, each section by itself, and therefore each section is susceptible to Tumah. Mishum Shlosha Kelim, Mishum Kli Kibul, or Mishum Kli Mataches, or Mishum Kli Kavra. Here, the Mishnah is just all over the place in terms of looking at the mill. Mishum Kli Kibul. Okay, so right now the Mishnah is describing the bottom piece, the number three piece. The Kli Kibul means the bottom. The bottom is made out of wood, but it has a toch, it has an inside, and so therefore it's Mekabel Tumah. We know that when it comes to any Kli that's made out of wood, in order for wood to become Tumah, it has to have a base Kibul. It has to have a receptacle. So therefore the bottom does, and therefore it's Mekabel Tumah. The top, the actual grinder, so that's Mekabel Tumah because it's made out of metal. Metal does not have to have a toch. As long as the metal is fashioned into something which is functional, in this case, the actual grinder itself, so then that's Mekabel Tumah. And then we get to the middle piece. The middle piece is the most intricate in terms of why it's Mekabel Tumah. Well, we don't have a lot in the Mishnah. The Mishnah just simply says, Mishum Kli Kavra, because it's a sieve. Okay, so let's take a look at... let me do the Gemara. Okay, the Gemara is going to explain. not a lot of Gemara to do, I understand. Tana, we learned on the Braisa. Tachtana mishum kli kibol. The bottom is a kli kibol. And size mishum kli kavra. The middle is a kli kavra. And olyonu mishum kli mataches. And the top is metal. Okay, so now let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi here helps us understand. The middle is mekabel tuma. That's going to be the trickiest part of this, of the mill. The top is metal, it's mekabel tuma. The bottom has a toch, it's wood, it has a toch, it's mekabel tuma. The middle section, which is basically just a sieve, that's all it is, it doesn't have a toch, it's not like a colander which has an inside to it, just basically a flat sieve. Okay, it's mekabel tuma, even though it's not made out of metal. Why should that be? So let's take a look at Rashi in the Gemara. Rashi emtsa'is, shimakefes is a mechbar mishum kli eitz, lamatama de ein kabule kibul. So in other words, Rashi says, if I went with the rules of wooden utensils, it's not going to be mekabel tuma. Ela chachamim gazu tuma al hakavra mishum arug. So Rashi says, it's the chachamim over here that says that the middle section is susceptible to tuma. Meaning, top and bottom are susceptible to tuma on a d'araisa level. The middle section of the mill is mekabel tuma, but only on a d'rabbanan level. Why? Because it's almost as if it's woven. V'afilu eina mechbar shel mateches mitame mishim kli kavra v'shalanu shehi shel mateches v'aritme mishim shute kli mateches. Now Rashi points out our mills, the middle section is made out of metal. So for our mills, it's not even a discussion. But the mills that's being described here in our Mishnah in the end of the second parak of Beitza, so those mills are made out of wood. The reason why it's mekabel tuma is because it looks like a woven garment. Woven garments obviously are mekabel tuma, meaning when you're talking about a garment,
it's got to be at the right dimensions. Right,
correct. In other words, when you're talking about a garment, garment obviously is not metal and it doesn't have a toch, but it's a garment, and garments are susceptible to tuma. This, I mean, obviously you need a good visual to help us understand this, but this is similar to a garment because the middle section is basically woven to create that sifting action. So there, Rashi says that's a gzeira derabanan, that the middle section is susceptible to tuma. Okay, last Mishnah in the second parak, agala shel katan, the wagon of a child. Okay, so everyone here immediately has, I'm sure, in their mind the picture of the red wagon that we all had as kids. Okay, that is not just our picture, but Rashi has that picture in his mind as well. Agala shel katan, you look at the Rashi in the Mishnah. She'osen lo lischok v'yoshev aleha metalten oso aleha. So Rashi basically describes a small wagon. Okay, the red is, of course, our youth. But that's the way Rashi describes it. If you take a look at Tosfos gives a different description of what we're talking about. Right? Tosfos says, we're not talking about the wagon as a toy. We're talking about, says Tosfos, a walker, right? You think a walker is a modern invention, right? That little walker that the toddler has in order to help him walk. It's not even a toddler, right? Whatever that stage is of the development. But Tosus, you take a look at the last Tosus of our perek, agala shel katan, perish a kunshus shehakatan yoshev betocha. V'lo nihira demai kamash v'lam pshita ha'in lecha klim yucha gadol mezeh lekach nirali dahainu klisha osin lekatanim lehislamed lehiluch. Tosha says we're talking about a walker that helps the child learn how to walk. Tosha gives a wonderful description, basically set on three wheels. And the child holds onto it. And the child is holding onto it so that he's able to walk. Okay? Yep. So that's, anyway, so, okay, fine. So wagon, walker, whichever one we're talking about. So Temea Medras. So it's subject to Tumas Medras. Okay, let's review what we know. We know that Azav and Azava, and for that matter, Nida Yoledes as well, is not only Tamei because of a discharge that they have coming out of their body, but they're going to have a special Tuma that's dedicated to them, which is called Tumas Medras. Tumas Medras means that when they sit on something that was designed to be sat on, meaning not just sitting on, right, not a bucket that was overturned, but sat or leaned down or lie down on something that was designed to be sat on, so that item is going to become tamei, same degree as tuma as the person themselves. The person themselves is an avatuma, so that which they sit on is also going to be an avatuma. So that's a special tuma called tumas medras, specific to the zav zavanida yoledes. So the Mishnah points out over here that if I have the wagon of the child, it's subject to Tumas Medrash because its purpose is to be sat on. And the Mishnah points out, you can move it on Shabbos, meaning as the Gemara is going to point out, it has the status of a kli. Now dragging it on Shabbos, you can only drag it on kalim, meaning on flooring, on clothing. You can't drag it on the ground itself. Rav Yehuda Omer kol hakelim inigra nechutz min agala mimneshi koveshes. Rav Yehuda says that you can't drag anything on the ground on Shabbos with exception to the agala mimneshi koveshes, because the agala doesn't actually plow through the ground. The agala has wheels. So what do the wheels do? They don't move earth. They just simply depress it into the ground. That's not choresh. That's not plowing. Plowing means to actually till, to move earth. The wheels are just simply depressing it into the ground. And therefore, Rav Yehuda of our Mishnah, who generally is machmir by davishenu miskaven, but is going to be lenient regarding the wagon because the wheels have a depressing movement, they don't actually till the soil. If you're leveling, right, you're correct. Meaning, we talked about sweeping the house yesterday, sweeping the dining room. If you're actually leveling here, all you're doing is just simply moving the wagon through, right? It's like pushing a stroller on soft grass.
Why do you sit on it?
Huh? From Rashi, it's easier to hear because Rashi says it's the child's wagon, so the child actually sits on the wagon. So the Tosos, according to Tosos, the Gemara, the Mishnah is saying a bigger chiddush, seemingly, in that we're talking about a walker. Okay, I agree with you. So start with the Gemara, finishing up. Agal shel katan tamei medras da samich ilavei. So you're leaning on it. I mean, that's the language of the Gemara. Samich ilavei, you're leaning on it. That sounds a little more like Tosos, where we're told we're describing something more like a walker than we are a wagon, a child's wagon. Anyway, when he tells b'Shabbos mishum deikatoris kli alaha, and then the Gemara just simply comments that you're allowed to move it on Shabbos because it's a kli, meaning for something to be not be muksa, it has to have the status of a kli. It does. Ve'ena nigres agabe kelim in agabe karkalo. You can't drag it on the ground. My taima dekavet charitz, because if you drag it on the ground, you're going to making a groove in the ground, and you can't do that on Shabbos. So mani Rav Yehuda damer davishen miskaven aser. Now, the author of that opinion has to be Rav Yehuda. You really had no intent of making a groove in the ground while pulling it through the ground, but you can't do it because even though that's not your intent, a davar she'eino miskaven is forbidden according to Rav Yehuda. Good. So that has to be Rav Yehuda. But then we run into a technical problem. Well, if the author of that first opinion in the Mishnah is Rav Yehuda, so then what's the continuation of the Mishnah? Then the Mishnah presents who? The opinion of Rav Yehuda. Gemara says, okay, that's a technical problem. Because we know it can't be Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon says that a davishen miskaven is mutter, and here is a classic example of davishen miskaven. Rabbi Shimon Amar Gora Adam Mita Kisa V'Safso Uva Vashlo is Kaven Lasos Chritz. Rabbi Shimon says that you're allowed to drag your bed, your chair, a bench across the ground from one place to another. You may make a groove in the ground, but you had no intention to do so. Remember, the Gemara says, not here, but the Gemara says time and again, if it's really heavy and for sure you're going to make a groove in the ground, that's what's called the psik resha, that would be forbidden. Okay, but in general though, if it's a light chair, a light bench, and you may create a groove in the ground, so this is a davishen miskaven. Rabbi Shimon says, that's mutter, it's not my intent. On Shabbos, I only violate Shabbos with intent. Meleches machsheves asra Torah. Rabbi Yehuda says, even though that wasn't your intent, it's still going to be forbidden. Okay, again, a basic machlokas that we see time and again. So the Gemara now points out, good, that's a great way to understand a Mishnah, but then how do you read on in the Mishnah? Ema Seifa. Just move on to the next part of the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Omer Eina Kol Nigran B'Shabbos Chutz Min Agala. Mibnei Sheikov Eshes. Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah says that you can't drag anything on the ground on Shabbos except for the wagon, because the wagon doesn't till the soil, but it just simply presses the earth into the ground. And that's not choresh. Mimnesha kavesh is in aval charitz lo. So, aval charitz lo avda. It's not making a groove in the ground. You're not tilling the soil. So the Gemara says, trei tanai vali b'derav Yehuda. So the Gemara says that you're right. It is difficult to read our Mishnah, but what you'll say is that both Tanaim subscribe to our Mishnah. Let me say that sentence again better. Mm-hmm. Both Tanaim of our Mishnah subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda. It's just a question of, they argue whether or not the depression action of the wheel is in fact going to be considered the Malacha of Charesh. But fundamentally, they both agree that Davishena Miskaven is going to be prohibited. Okay, that's how you say the Mishnah. Hadron Alach Yom Tov, that is the end of the second perek of the Masechta. Okay, good. We are ready to move on. We're now beginning the third perek of the Masechta. Today's daf is Daf Chav Dalet. And the third perek of the Masechta is going to obviously continue with the discussion of Yom Tov. And now we talk about other forms of food preparation. We have been discussing up until now in the first and second perek. First perek, a discussion of Simchas Yom Tov and what I can do for Simchas Yom Tov, primarily Muktzah. The second perek of the Masechta spoke about what happens when Yom Tov falls either immediately before Shabbos or immediately after Shabbos, and how do I address the Erev Tavshilin issues, the Tefillah B'Mikvah issues, and then a couple of other assorted topics. And now we're on the third parak of the Masechta, and the third parak of the Masechta talks about other food preparation. Now, again, we know that on Yom Tov you could do what's called Ochel Nefesh. You can cook on Yom Tov. You can shecht on Yom Tov. You can make fire on Yom Tov. But now the discussion is going to be, what about, how about getting the animal? Right? Let's talk fish. Okay, so in other words, good, I can cook fish. Does that mean I could cast a line into the lake and trap the fish in order to get it? So the Mishnah says no, that's not open for discussion. The Mishnah starts off Ein Sadim Dagim Min Abibim B'Yom Tov. You can't catch fish from the lake on Yom Tov. Ve'Enos Nimlefnei Mezonos, and you can't feed them as well. Aval sadin chayev of min abibrim, but what you can do is that you can you can get your wild animals and your birds from your bivrim, right? Some sort of pen. Venos lofnei mezonos, and you can feed them as well. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer lo kol abibrim shavim zeaklal. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you can't look at every pen the same way. Here's a general rule: kol mechusat seidar, if it's deficient in trapping, usher. So then I can't go get it. But if it's not deficient in trapping, mutter, then it would be permissible. Okay, we'll come back. We'll discuss from Shimon Gamliel and our Mishnah in more detail. But right now, let's just focus on the first point of the Mishnah. The first point of the Mishnah is that you can't go and capture fish on Yom Tov. Okay, let's ask the really simple question: why not? What's wrong? What happened? You looked at Rashi. So it's okay. So Rashi writes, take a look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. So Rashi writes, Afagav de Shchita Vafia Bishol Me'Avos Malach Hosein V'Hotru L'Tzorach Yom Tov. So, right. Well, so right. So let's see. Your point is well taken. I'll get to your point in just a moment. So Rashi writes that even though shechting, baking, cooking are part of the Avos Malachos, the 39 Malachos, and they are permitted at Sarach Yom Tov, and we know that you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov. Time Mishum De'i Efshar Me'erev Yom Tov. So the reason why you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov is, what are you going to do? You're going to do it before Yom Tov? Now, you could have said, sure. Rashi's going to argue, no, you couldn't have. De'shchita Chayish Lamech Mar Bisra Pen Yischamein V'yasriach. Look, you shech the animal a day prior, meaning not on Yom Tov, the day prior. Now remember, in the good old days, no refrigeration. So every time you shecht an animal, you're talking about a very short shelf life of the animal. Now yes, in the good old days, they salted the animal to preserve the meat, but still, you can't compare yesterday's shechting animal to today's shechted animal. So today's shechted animal is going to be fresher, better, so it falls under the category of something that I couldn't have done yesterday. Again, I could have, but the qualitative difference will make all the difference. It will make the difference between enjoying the meat and eating yesterday's shechting. But trapping, Rashi argues, that I could have trapped yesterday. Now, Rashi admits, I'm not going to take the fish out of the water, Because then we run into the same problem. What you'll do is you'll trap the fish, you'll keep the net in the water so that the fish are pre-trapped before Yontiv, but you could do the act of trapping prior to Yontiv. And so what you'll do is you'll trap the fish, keep the net in the water to keep the fish nice and fresh, but then you come on Yontiv and you can go and just simply pick it up right from your net. That's how Rashi argues the difference between Shechita versus Tzeda. So as Danny points out, right, that's Rashi's understanding of the big distinction. What's the difference between Shechting and trapping? Shechting could not have done before Yontiv. Trapping could have been done before Yontiv. Okay. Who's going to vociferously disagree with Rashi in this particular issue? Tosfos. Tosfos is going to seriously argue against Rashi. Take a look at the first Tosfos on our Perek. So Tosfos says, Perish Rashi, Dafak Avdochel Nefesh, Motor Haino Dafka Kagon, Bishop Vafia Vishchita, Diev Shemer of Yantav, Diosit of Pas Chama, Vigam Bishop Yantav Vishchita, Shem Yasriach. Avot Seda Eshel Atzot Amer of Yantav, Vinechen Bamaim, Mesudas of Voloyamos. Okay, I shouldn't have read it. I didn't need to read all that, but I'm okay. Anyway, he goes over Rashi's Pshat. And Tosfos says, Velo Nehira. Tosfos says, I don't agree. The distinction that we're making between that which I can and cannot have done before Yontiv, that is a distinction, not for Ochel Nefesh, for Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, for those things which are allowing me to prepare the meal, meaning things that I'm not doing directly to the food, but things I'm doing for the preparation of the food, but not for the actual food itself. Meaning when dealing with the actual food itself, we don't make the distinction of whether I could or could not have done it before Yontif. So good. So Tosha says, so then, where does the distinction lie? Meaning, so why can't I trap on Yontav? I mean, our Mishnah says you can't. So Tosa says, go back to what I said in the beginning of the Masechta. El Adavka Memachshon Yesh Chiluk Lekach Nir Li Kaperish Rabbeinu Chananel. I don't remember. Anyway, Chaim, right? Perish Rav Chaim Mekinon Shepirish Leel Mishum Didami Lekzira. So Tosa says, let's go back to what I said in the beginning of the Masechta. So let's remind each other, because it's such a basic point. What did Tosa say back in the beginning of the Masechta on Daf Gemol? He says, he quotes the Yerushalmi to make this point, that on Yontav, which malachas can I do on Yontav for food? Lisha ve'elech. Only from kneading and onward. Meaning only the last malachas in the preparation of the food are the malachas that are permitted on Yontav. All the prior malachas cannot be done, period, on Yontav. Meaning we're going to take the malachas and we're going to draw a line in the malachas. Only from the point of Lisha and onward, and the Yerushalmi has a drasha, how it arrived at that point. But anyway, it's Tosos on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. It's the big Tosos on that Amud.
Agricultural malachas, though.
Oh, so, great. Excellent. And so, now, right, this part also requires more thought and more analysis. I'm just giving the basics. The Yerushalmi says that you're going to take the 11 malachos of baking and basically draw the line in the sand where only from Lisha, now there are only two malachos left. Kneading, baking. Only those two malachos can be done. Anything prior to that, as a malacha, can't be done for Ochel Nefesh. That's Tosfos quoting the Yerushalmi. Now, right, Dan, again, you got to think about this. Danny raises this point. Now we move on to the malacha of trapping. So basically, same idea. Meaning, it's only going to be the last malachas of the animal preparation, which are going to be shechita. Anything prior to that, as a malacha, cannot be done for Ochel Nefesh. That's the way Tosfos understands it. So it's interesting, there really is such a fundamental debate between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of what can and can't be done vis-a-vis malachas on Yontav. According to Rashi, the way it sounds like, the way it presents, all malachas are fair game. The only distinction is, can I, and I've not done it before Yontif. That's Rashi. Tosso says, no. You don't look at it from that perspective. You look at it from which malachas are the last in the sequence of food preparation. Only those last malachas can be done. In the world of baking, lisha and afia. In the world of animal, shechting. Okay, in other words, that's it. Only the last malachas. Admittedly, you're right. In other words, correct. In other words, in baking, you have 11 malachas. In animals, I think 2. Right? There's also tanning, but okay. Well, he quoted Yerushalmi, so he has the, you know, it's interesting. It's the way the Bavli works. Meaning, we're learning the Masechta, and God willing, in 2 weeks we're going to finish the entire Masechta. It'd be nice if the Bavli presented to us in like a nice, organized fashion, like which malachas can you do and which malachas can you not do on Yontav. That's not how the Bavli works, right? It's almost like it's reverse engineering. Like, in other words, we know which actions can and cannot be done, and then we have to try to create structure around that. We're going to try to create the organization around that so that we could see. We don't know. It'd be nice if the Bavli told us, but the Bavli's not going to tell us. So that's the big discussion we're having in the beginning of the third perek. So now we're looking at Rashi, we're looking at Tosos, meaning we're trying to create the rules, given that, trying to create the organization behind the rules, the system behind the rules, when, you know, all we're given in the Mishnah is, you know, the do's and the don'ts. Okay, that's our job, meaning that requires the effort and energy on our part. Lisha is kneading, afia is baking. Okay, good. And now let's move on to the Mishnah. Okay, I know I spent a lot of time there, but that's a big discussion. It's just an important issue in terms of, you know, trying to understand the system behind what you can and cannot do. Okay, the Mishnah went on to make the point that you can't feed the fish on Yantiv. Okay, well, why not? Again, let's take a look at Rashi. So Rashi writes, "Ein osnim lifnei adagim bezonos v'afil aman dar menefesh behema b'mashma." Now Rashi points out, just what was it? 2 days ago, we had the discussion of whether or not you're allowed to cook for your animals on Yantav, right? And the conclusion was no, meaning you feed your animals on Yantav, but you can't cook for your animals on Yantav. So Hani Mili, now even if Rashi says, even if you take the position that you can cook for your animals on Yantav, Rashi says, good, but that's only if they're your animals. The mizonos say malacha. Abadagim efshar lahem b'lo mizonos shem ochlim sharesh yasabim v'karka v'gado ochas akatan. So but Rashi says that the fish can fend for themselves. They don't need your feeding, and therefore you can't feed them on Yantiv, and for that matter on Shabbos as well. Okay. Okay. Fine. Anyway, there's a Tosfos over. Okay, we got to go on. We're gonna fall too far behind if we don't go on. Okay, let's go to the Gemara. Our Mishnah says that on Yontif you can't trap fish from the biver. Now the biver is some sort of pond, lake, or whatever. It's in other words, it could be it's a fish farm. Okay, in other words, but the point is that it requires more trapping. You can't just stick your hand in and get the fish. The fish is going to be swimming around. You got to make efforts and energy in order to trap it, so that you can't do on Yontif. And the Mishnah says that, okay, fine. Uriminu. So let's start with the Gemara. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Biver shel chayav shel ofos ein tzad man biyamtov einos and lifnei mizonos. If I have a biver that is of a wild animal or of birds, so you can't trap them on Yontif, and you can't feed them. Now, kasha chaya chaya, kasha ofos a ofos. Now, here's the problem. It's very simple. Our Mishnah says that you can't trap fish from the biver. Our Mishnah also says that when it comes to chayin of, if it's in this kind of enclosed area, chayin of would be okay, our Mishnah says. The Braisa says chayiv of is not okay. You can't trap them. Now, Bishlam, chaya chaya, lokasha, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabban, and the Gemara says, look, in terms of wild animals, so I'm not going to give an elegant answer, but we'll give an answer. Meaning, the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa could be explained in the following. Rav Yehuda Omer, Atzad, Sipor, Lamigdal, Vitzvil, Abayas, Chayev. So, Rav Yehuda says that if I take a bird and basically trap it into some sort of closet, so that's considered trapping on Shabbos and Yontav, you will be liable for doing so. And if you take a deer and you bring it into the house, you're going to be chayev. So levayisu demechayev avala bevim lo. So that means that if I take a deer and I bring it into the pen, so the pen is not considered trapping. And the Chachamim say that a bird brought into a closet, I agree, that's considered trapping. But deer and that's taken into your pen, that is not considered trapping. Here takes a little bit of thought on our part just to understand the next part of the Gemara. Meaning, what are we just to see? That in this brace that we just quoted, Rav Yehuda says that when you take a deer and corral it into a house, the house is considered now an enclosed area. You've officially trapped it. Which means that if it's a larger area than your house, like your pen, that's not trapping. Meaning because there's a lot of room for the deer to negotiate around in the pen, and even though you've moved it into a more circumscribed area, a more confined area, it's not considered trapped. That means, according to Rav Yehuda, you go into your pen and you run around and you try to get it, so that's considered trapping. According to the Chachamim, when you bring it into the pen, that's considered the act of trapping. Which means, according to the Chachamim, that if you go in your pen now and you take it, that's fine. Because the animal now is considered trapped. So now, Mishnah versus Braisa, very good. The Mishnah says that you can go into your pen and take your deer from the pen. That's the opinion of the Chachamim. Because once it's in the pen, it's considered trapped. The Braisa that says that you can't go into your pen and take the deer from the pen, that's going like the opinion of Rav Yehuda, who's of the opinion that the pen is not considered trapped. Good. So we have a way of understanding the Mishnah versus the Braisa vis-a-vis Chaya. Ela ofas, ofas kasha. But what's difficult is the birds, meaning that we don't have a good way of resolving the birds, because in the Braisa that we just quoted, we all agree that the only way trapping a bird is considered trapping is only if I take it and put it into the migdal, into a small closet. So the Gemara says that maybe the distinction is whether or not the pen has a roof or not, does not have a roof, meaning there's an avenue for the bird to escape. The Gemara says, yeah, but remember, the Braisa that we quoted on the top of the Amud is talking about corralling the bird into your house. Your house has a roof. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that's not considered trapping according to everybody. According to the Chachamim, according to Rav Yehuda, that's not considered trapping. Only when you take the bird and put him into a closet, some sort of makeshift closet, then and only then is it considered trapping. So that distinction is not a good distinction between a roof versus a non-roof. Amarava baravuna hacha b'tsipor deror askinan. So the Gemara says, well, we're going to say that our Mishnah is talking about a very limited scenario where the Mishnah is describing a tsipor deror. Right? How else do I say this? A free bird. Right? The tzipor dror, the free bird. She'enu mekabelos marus. Now, why is it called? Now, it sounds like the Gemara is describing some specific type of bird. Sounds that way. Anyway, whatever the case is, it's not good with authority. It's terrible with authority. The Tana, huh? Yeah, the Tana de Rav Yishmael Lamani Krashmat Sipor Jorsha Shadara Bebais Kibisada. Meaning, and this obstinate, right, adolescent bird, if you will. So, right, lives in the house like in the field. Meaning, it doesn't accept ownership under any circumstance. So you bring it into the house, okay, I'm in the house. Doesn't mean you got me. You don't got me. Right, he'll fly away under all circumstances. So the Gemara says that's. So when the Bryce is talking about taking the bird and trapping it into a closet as opposed to the house, it's talking about the tzipor drawer, because bringing it into the house is going to be insufficient. Okay, and our Mishnah is talking about, quote unquote, your regular birds. So the Gemara says, you know what? I'll tell you what. Now that we've arrived at this place and we're going to make distinction between different types of birds, truth of the matter is we can make different distinctions between different types of pens. Meaning, and you probably thought this going into the whole discussion, not all pens are the same. You could have large corrals, you could have small corrals. And very easily you can argue that if it's a small corral, the animal's trapped. If it's a large corral where there's plenty of room for the animal to negotiate, so then the animal's not trapped. And the Gemara says in That's intuitive and it's correct. The Gemara says, let's give some sort of guidelines to understand the distinction. If the corral is so small that you walk into the corral and you don't have to run around, just simply one lunge and you'll get the animal, that's considered bivakatan, meaning that the animal in such a corral is considered trapped. And therefore, on Yontev, you can go in and you can grab that animal. That's not considered trapping. The idach bivagadol, and anything bigger than that would be a bivagadol. Inami kol hechadika ukse bivagadol v'idach bivakatan. If it's got nooks and crannies, if it's got corners where the animal can duck into the corners, that's bivagadol. Otherwise, it's a bivakatan. Inami kol hechadinafli tula dekali adad bivakatan. If the shadow of one wall falls on another wall, right? I know it sounds like we're going back to our sukkah discussion, but in other words, it's such a small enclosure that the walls are literally coming in on one another. So that's bivakatan, v'idach bivakadon. Something other than that is bivakadon. Again, it's like Gemara is just giving us basic guidelines to help us understand. Small pen, that's and the animal's there, that's considered trapped. Large pen, the animal has room to negotiate and move around and run away. That's not considered trapped. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amr Kol Abivrim Shavim. Amr Rav Yosef, Amr Rav Yudah, Amr Shmuel Halacha Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel. Okay, the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, where basically not all pens are the same. Good. Amr Le'abai Halacha Mechlad De Pligi. Now it's funny. You're saying the halacha is like Shimon Gamliel. Is he arguing in our Mishnah? Meaning, can't you just simply say that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not arguing with the Tanakhama, but just simply explaining the Tanakhama? So Amr Le'ay My Nafka Lachmina. So the response was, okay, and is that really important? Meaning, I'm telling you the halacha falls like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So what difference does it make whether he is explaining the Tanakhama or disagreeing with the Tanakhama? When all said and done, that's the halacha. So Amalei Gamar Gamor Zimurta Tehei. So the response is, no, it's important. Meaning, do you want Gamar to turn like into a song? Meaning you sing a song, right? When we were kids, right? We sang songs all the time. We didn't know what we were singing. Just in other words, the songs came off our lips. Good. So you want Gemara to turn into a song? Meaning, right, I'm just supposed to say the Mishnayos over and over again and not understand? No. Rav Shimon Gamliel, either he's explaining the Tanakhama or arguing with the Tanakhama. And yeah, practically speaking, we follow Rav Shimon Gamliel. So what difference does it make? I'll tell you the difference. The significance of learning is to understand what we're learning, or at least try our best. Good. So it is important. It's not an academic issue. We should know how to properly understand the Mishnah. Okay, let's just quickly move and get to the next Mishnah. Zekal kol mechusat seder hechidam mechusat seder. I'm Rav Yosef. I'm Rav Yudah. I'm Shmuel Kol Sha'amar Haba Mitzuda V'Nitzo Dena. Okay. Rav Shimon Gamliel on our Mishnah says if it's deficient in trapping, so then any action is called trapping. So what's considered deficient in trapping? So the Gemara gives what should be like a really simple explanation. That is, go get the trap. If I need to tell my, you know, where I'm going in with my son into the backyard. Okay, go get the trap. So if I need to do that, that's considered deficient in trapping. And then that action would be considered trapping, and on Yontif that would be forbidden. So the Gemara says, what about your birds, your geese? Where the Braisa says you'd be exempt. Now, when you're in your backyard to get the geese, you need to get the trap. You're not going to be able to do without the trap. So we're kind of at a standoff because I need to get the trap in order to get the geese, but meanwhile, the Braisa says trapping the geese in your backyard is not considered an act of trapping. I'm a Rav Ravun, I'm a Shmuel, halal l'bayin l'klovan l'erev, halal ain bayin l'klovan l'erev. So the Gemara says, well, what we'll try to do is make the following distinction. we're talking about birds which come back to roost at night versus birds that don't come back to roost at night. The birds that come back to roost at night, so they're considered more domesticated. Rashi writes, Noach litav sham sham, hilka charehin kinitzodin. Their viewed as already trapped. So the Gemara says, "V'arei yoni shavach v'yoni aliyah debayin leklovim la'erev v'tanya." So the Gemara says, "What about your birds that go into your birdhouse, where they do go back in at night, and meanwhile, outside Yoni Shavach Yoni Aliyev Tzipram Shekanu B'Tipichim B'Biros Chayev. The Brisa says that the birds in the birdhouse, if I go and try to grab them on Yantiv, that's considered an act of trapping, even though they come back at night. Alamarava Baravuna Amashmo Halalubain Leklovam Laerev Umizono San Alecha. So the Gemara makes one final point in the distinction. If they're coming back to your house at night and they're expecting you to feed them, they're more domesticated. And so therefore trapping them is not considered an act of trapping. If they do come back to the birdhouse at night, but they're not counting on you for food, they're not as domesticated, and by you grabbing them, that's an act of trapping. Rav Mari Amar Hani Avidal Rabuye Hani Lo Avidal Rabuye. So the Gemara says another possible distinction. one flies away, one the other one does not fly away. So Kulanami Avidal Rabuye. The Gemara says, what do you mean? They all fly away. L'kovan kamrin da Avidal Rabuye. So the Gemara says, yeah, but where do they fly away to? If they fly away into their birdhouse, that's considered domesticated. If they fly away, but not back to the birdhouse, that's not considered domesticated. Okay, so the Gemara, as you probably noticed, really struggling to try to give us a good parameter of what is and what is not considered trapping on Yantav. The basic guideline is that if they're trapped already, so then taking them on Yantav obviously is not an act of trapping. If they're not trapped already, so then taking them on Yantav would be an act of trapping, and therefore forbidden. What exactly are the parameters? So the Gemara spent some time trying to give us some sort of understanding guideline of what these parameters are. In the context of animals, the enclosure of the pen, in the context of birds, a house versus a closet, in the context of your birds in the backyard, right, the birds that come back at night versus those that don't, coming back at night expecting you to feed them, etc., etc. Okay, and the bigger discussion that we had as we began the third parak today was, which malachas can I do for ochel nefesh, which I can't? And we touched on today the fundamental machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of how we systematically look at what we can and cannot do on Yantav. According to Rashi, it's an issue of that which could have been done versus before Yantav, which is that which can't. And according to Tosfos, no, the last malachas of the process can be done. Any previous malachas cannot be done. Okay, the basic systemic difference between Rashi versus Tosfos. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the Mishnah on the bottom of Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. Good. Adkan. Sure.